I am the pastor of youth here, and I work with an amazing team of leaders. So I'd like any adults, youth leaders, to please stand up right now so we can recognize you. I see you. You're in the crowd. Stand up. There you go. Let's congratulate. Thank you. I also started to work with some student leaders this year. So if you're one of our student leaders, could you also stand up, please, and be recognized? Thank you. Thank you. Awesome. All right. So the youth are going to be doing the presentation today. And of course, we have to start with something technology related because phones are a little bit of a part of their lives. So could you go to Kahoot.it for me? And we're going to introduce our activity this morning with the Kahoot. And this is how the youth started there. They're working with the parables. One of the leaders made a Kahoot that was 23 questions long. Don't worry, I pared it down to 5. So I believe that God, really? That's really funny. Okay, so you put in, so you go to Kahoot.it, and then you put in your, you put in that code, and then you put, Black Panther, I figured that had to be up there. Okay, so I'm gonna give you guys like 30 more seconds to try and get in. I love it. I love the names. I do this in my classroom, and I'm a lot more regimented about your names. So here you can be almost anyone, although we can block them out if you see a problem. Marvel is, wow. Okay. All right. 10 more seconds. People putting them in. I think you can answer these questions. I think that you can handle it. A little more time? Okay. Sorry. Sorry. So I'll keep talking. Our youth are awesome, and they're going to lead the service today as soon as I get out of here. So I'm really excited. I want you, when you see the youth that come up here, just be so impressed that they showed up at 9 o'clock this morning to get ready for this. So right there, right? That's it. Yep. If you have a teenager or you were once a teenager, you know that that was a big deal. All right. Am I good?
No.
Oh, how are you guys not on yet? The loading, that's always the best one. Okay, are you guys in now? All right, so we're gonna start the Kahoot. So it's gonna ask you a question at the top. It's gonna ask you, is this a parable or not? And there's 4 choices, and then you click on it. Okay, so the Good Samaritan, and your 4 choices are parable of Jesus, Old Testament story, New Testament story, not a Bible story. Yeah, I gave you 20 seconds for the first one just to make sure you remember how to play this. Doing great. Wow, look at those. That's awesome. I'm impressed that the network's working for us this morning, actually. It's great. And, oh my gosh, it was a parable of Jesus. Nice job. All right, awesome. So right now, so then I click to the next one, and it will tell us the one guy is in the lead. All right, we're going to go to the next question. If you're the one guy, nice job. Jesus feeds the 5,000. Parable of Jesus, Old Testament story, New Testament story, not a Bible story. Got a lot less time. Wow, you guys are good. You guys have got this figured out now, don't you? All right. It's a New Testament story. It's not technically a parable. Nice job. All right, let's see who's in the lead now. It's you better stop. Okay, I can't even read the usernames. All right, next question. The hidden treasure. So be thinking about what it is, the hidden treasure. Parable of Jesus, Old Testament story, New Testament story, not a Bible story. Doing great. Are you guys in the lead? Who's the? Okay. All right. It is a parable. The hidden treasure is a parable. And next, Goofy is now in the lead. I love how it switches so quickly. All right. Got 2 more questions. Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve. Parable of Jesus, Old Testament story, New Testament story, not a Bible story. And time's up. It is an Old Testament story. It is. Adam and Eve is the first, kind of the first story. All right, next. Goofy is still in the lead. Oh, did I make you admit it? Goofy is Suvia. That's great. I love it. I love it. Let's see if you can hold it here, though. You ready? All right, last question. Parable of the Iron Man. Parable of the Iron Man. All right, tough one. I know this is going to be difficult for you to get this one right. Parable of the Iron Man. And oh my gosh, it was not a Bible story. Thank you very much for playing. All right. Wait, who is the winner? Goofy did win, followed by Black Panther and D. All right. Now, can you put your phones away? I'm really talking to this section over here. Thank you for playing. So what I'm going to do is introduce Hubert, who is one of our high school leaders. He's going to come up and kind of talk about how the youth made this presentation for you this morning. So let's welcome Hubert.
Good morning, everybody. So over the last few weeks, the high schoolers over in the barn, where our high school members meet, been learning about parables. We've been actually, what is a parable? How is it used? Why is it important? Trying to understand this method of teaching, which Jesus uses in the New Testament. And it's been kind of a fascinating process because these stories in terms of parables are generally pretty short. They're very simple stories, yet they have lots of complexity to them. And were clearly very meaningful for folks living 2,000 years ago in the crossroads of Asia, Africa, and Europe, and were dealing with very practical elements of sheep and coins and agriculture of the Middle East at that time. But most of us aren't that familiar with sheep. I know I'm not, other than some wool on occasion. And so one of the things that we've done, or that they've done, is take the stories, read them, kind of take them apart in terms of understanding them, and then doing a few rewrites and putting them in a more modern context. And so we have a few versions to share with you in terms of the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, and the parable of the mustard seed. And so we're going to have folks share some older texts and then some modern texts that the young people have worked together to create. And then afterwards, we're going to have a little panel here in the back and have some conversation about some of the deeper meanings and those interpretations for today. So, Colin, if you could come up and get us started.
This is the biblical version of the parable of the lost sheep. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathered around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and he eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over their 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And then this is the modern version that we rewrote in the high school group. A new kid in school doesn't fit in, and the teacher has to help integrate them into a new community, and the teacher cares about the new kid feeling like he belongs more than the other kids that already know each other.
Everybody else?
Oh, maybe they couldn't come. They wanted to so much.
No, I didn't fall asleep in the back of the cabin, Jewel, all of you, did I?
You do, Jewel! Shut up!
Come on, you guys, it's Christmas! Oh, Kevin!
How are you?
Ah, you're all right.
I love you. You okay?
Be careful.
It's pretty cool that you didn't burn the place down.
Thanks, Buzz.
Wait a minute. How did you guys get home?
Oh, we took the morning flight, remember? The one you didn't want to wait for?
Oh, no.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Well, someone has to find an open store. We don't even have milk here.
I went shopping yesterday.
You shopping?
I got the milk, eggs, and fabric softener.
No kidding. What a funny guy. What else did you do while we were away?
Just hung around.
You went shopping?
Yeah, go.
He doesn't know how to tie his shoe. He's going shopping?
Thank you. Okay, so my parable was the parable of the lost coin, or my group's parable, but it goes, or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And now Cassidy will come up to read the modern version of this parable.
So this is our interpretation of it. A woman had 10 friends and lost one. She apologizes, shows her appreciation, and works hard to rebuild the friendship. And then she calls her friends to party with each other and over their reawakened friendship. And God and his angel squad party harder when the sinners repent.
This is the parable of the mustard seed. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds come and perch in its branches. Our modern interpretation says, when someone first creates a YouTube channel, it begins with no subscribers. The creator must organically grow the channel by having interesting content and engaging with their new community. With these, the channel has potential to become something much larger than what it started as, with millions of subscribers. Casey Neistat is an example of this. He started his channel in 2010 with a default of zero subscribers. His channel has over 9 million subscribers and over 2 billion views. He has daily vlogs that generally promote positivity.
So thanks so much, guys. So we're going to just have a little chat about those parables, and we're hoping that in this, you know, next few minutes, we'll be able to give you kind of an idea of some of the conversations that these guys have had as they've wrestled with these parables and looked to interpret them. So if you're on the panel, I just invite you to come up and join us on the stage here. So we have a couple of handheld mics so everybody can be heard. To a page, if you take that one from now, we'll pass these along, you know, as we need to. So one of the things we've been talking about regarding parables in here is just how you know, there's different interpretations of parables, and you know, what's important is we don't take it doesn't take an expert to interpret these parables. It takes a open ear, right? You know, Jesus said, he that has ears, or she that has ears, let them hear. And so, you know, we thought it'd be really great for you guys to hear from a more youthful perspective, from younger people like Hubert and myself, to get that sort of more edgy perspective on some of these parables, right? But seriously, there's, you know, as we said, there's no right or wrong answer. So these guys are going to share from different perspectives. We've already had some really good conversations about this. I think they've got some really great insights. I just want to throw out there to start off with, and any one of you can respond to this, but why do you think, as you've been going through these parables, why do you think Jesus taught in parables? Hubert touched on that a little bit, but what have you found, maybe as you've looked at these ones, that's been helpful about the parable form? Anybody want to share about that? I think Paige, you had some thoughts, didn't you? Put you on the spot there. You got the microphone.
I do. Oh, okay, it works. Cool. So I was thinking about it as, so I think our good friend Gabriel, who's new to the church, brought up a good point that when you're telling anyone a lesson or something like that, they turn it into a story to put you into the environment of, like, you would understand that kind of situation. That's why they came up, that's why Jesus told the story, the parable of the lost coin, of the lost sheep, and so forth. You put, these people are just like his disciples and his followers, and they run into daily situations like losing a sheep, losing a coin. So I think in that time, that's why he told him in those story forms, and that's why we put it into modern terms today to hopefully incorporate and tie everyone together here to show that we all have similarities no matter what backgrounds we come from.
Yeah, that's great. Any other thoughts on anybody got? And if, when you speak for the first time, just say who you are. Give us your name. Any other thoughts on the parables in general?
I'm Dylan. And I think the parable format is very similar to how people use analogies in daily conversations. It can help both simplify and help people, it can help people both relate to the concepts, and it can help simplify overly complicated concepts. So in that way, it's really useful. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, one of the things we talked about actually a little bit together, and it's really interesting hearing these guys interact, was how you know, the title of this series is Beneath the Surface, and we as we started unpacking some of these things, and I know you've had this experience when you've been meeting together as well, but as we started unpacking some of these parables, you would start off at one level, but then it would be like, oh, that leads on to another one, and then you guys had perspectives that I hadn't thought about. So that sort of takes to another level a little bit deeper, and then you can keep going down. And obviously we've been saying, you know, the meaning of these parables is beneath the surface. It's not necessarily immediately obvious. There's perhaps some obvious meaning, but it these are kind of genius stories, really, that Jesus was telling to open us up and challenge us. Let's talk a little bit about the three parables you guys picked. Two of them, right, the lost sheep and the lost coin, they're sort of back-to-back parables. They're in Luke's Gospel, chapter 15, and they come sequentially. Why do you think Jesus told two stories that seem to mean the same thing, right? The interpretations seem quite similar. I know, Eamon, you had a couple of thoughts about that, right? So maybe Dylan, you can pass the mic. This is Eamon, by the way.
Oh, I'm Eamon. It's kind of like the coin. The woman lost the coin, but the sheep lost itself. Like, the coin is just an object.
Eamon, if you hold the mic right close up, that's good.
The coin is just an object.
You've got good things to say. I want to make sure they hear it. So.
It's different than the sheep who wandered off on its own and depends on the person to find it. Where with the woman, if she doesn't find the coin, it's okay because the coin doesn't need her. She more so needs the coin than the coin needs her.
Right. Yeah, there's a big difference between the sheep and the coin, right? I mean, I think what's interesting, because we don't have time to go into it, but the beginning of these parables, so this is a series of three parables, actually. There's another one, you know, the story of the prodigal son, which we're not talking about today, comes right after that. But those three parables are prefaced by that part that Colin read, where it says that the sinners and tax collectors are eating with Jesus. He's eating with them, and the Pharisees, the religious people, are really annoyed about that. They're really offended. And Jesus tells these stories to kind of really expose the Pharisees. The story of the sheep, to your point, the story of sheep seems to be, sheep can get lost, right? Sheep can be kind of, they're regarded as foolish animals in some respects. So you could say, and the Pharisees probably would say, that these sinners, it's their fault. They're lost because they're lost people. They're making all these crazy decisions. Whereas you can't say that about a coin, right? A coin is an inanimate object. But the desire for the coin and the desire for the sheep is what defines these stories. So it's really these are stories about God's incredible love for people, which is really cool. And yeah, Gabriel, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Gabriel. This is my second time being here, so hi. I feel like to add on to what Eamon said, I feel like the focus of both parables is slightly different, because with the coin, it's about how much Jesus and God, how they long for us to be with them and how they miss us and they want us to be in their kingdom. Whereas with the sheep, it is still the shepherd missing the sheep, but it also is about how sheep are lost without their shepherd. So I feel like the focus there is kind of, it's shifted.
Yeah, yeah. So they're different. So there's a reason why Jesus tells more than one story, right? And going back to what we were talking about earlier, there's different perspectives in these stories to sort of unlock it. What's another, so comparing the two stories, in the sheep story, who represents God or Jesus in that story? I mean, who would you guys say? I don't, Michael, you've got...
No, I'm Michael.
in the lost coin story, God is represented by the woman, and a lot of times people see God as a man, but in this story we see him as a woman, and this is very important for a lot of people. And then in the other story, we see him as the shepherd. So it just shows both perspectives of God,
yeah,
of who he is.
So it is. Dylan, did you have a thought on that?
It's especially important to note that in these two actually fairly similar pieces, parables, God, the God figure is represented by both a female and a man, a male, and it shows, it serves one to sort of show God without a defined gender, which is already pretty important, but then on the other hand, it serves to make the parables even more relatable, no matter your gender or status or whatever.
So that's a great, if you're a woman in that crowd, you can relate to the story. If you're a guy in that crowd, you can relate to the story.
So, exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
Really good. What, let me ask you, Paige, were you going to say something on that?
I also just wanted to comment, the different environments that Jesus puts these characters in that not all of them are wealthy, not all of them are poor, and they live, if you look at all three stories, they all have completely different environments, completely different people, almost on opposite sides of a spectrum.
Tell us a little bit about that. How are they different?
So you look at, of course, Dylan mentioned the gender difference in the male and the female. And then the third one, the parable of the...
Prodigal son.
Prodigal son. That's a fairly wealthy man.
Yeah.
And then we look at the shepherd, who's a shepherd. I would assume that shepherds aren't very wealthy. And then also the woman isn't too wealthy either. That's why her 10 coins are so valuable to her. So it really does tie everyone together, because yes, not everyone's a woman. No, not everyone's a man. Not everyone's rich. Not everyone's poor. We're all different, so different that we really shouldn't be put on the same spectrum, but we are, because we have these small similarities that everyone has something valuable to them.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool. Michael, just then you said, which is, I think, this is classic. You said, in this story, he is a woman, right? and there's this is 21st century. We're wrestling with what on earth is God like, right? So let me ask you this. I mean, this is to you can respond to this. I mean, all of you respond. That whole idea of God not being gendered. In other words, I mean, historically, God has been thought of as a man. Whenever we read the Bible, pretty much every version of the Bible interprets or refers to God in the masculine form. So is that, when we think about God as being feminine and masculine, tell us a little bit about, how does that feel to you? Is that a problem? Is that difficult? Because I would say for a substantial part of the world and a substantial part of Christianity, that can be problematic. What do you guys think about that?
I feel like... being that he's the creator and, you know, he's kind of an ethereal being outside of our understanding and stuff, I feel like, and he does refer to himself as the godly father and such in the Old Testament and the New Testament just consistently, but I feel like tying God down to one gender or one form is, it's a little bit, maybe ignorant in a way, or just, because we can't fully grasp what God is, and so I feel like that's putting him in human terms, and he did come down as Jesus to a human form, and so, you know, that argument can be made that means he's male, but I feel like it's not really an issue as far as what gender God is.
So it's, yeah, okay. Anybody else got a perspective on that? Michael.
I think for me, as I was growing up in the church, I was always seeing God as male. Mm-hmm. But I think in more modern times, we're a lot more
like
accepting.
The last 5 years, more modern times, right?
Sure, yeah.
That was the old days.
Yeah, back when I was five.
We're so old, Michael. You just got to bear with us here, right?
Yeah. I think we're a lot more accepting of new ideas. And so I think it's a lot easier to grasp God as a female. And so, yeah.
Yeah. What would be, Dylan, you were going to say
something. Yeah, well, I have an interesting experience to that's relevant. I mean, I know that, God, there's nothing really about God that makes necessarily inherently male. I met this one person at a festival, and they had in their church they had a mural of God, but God in this mural was portrayed as a black woman. And so they had grown up thinking of God as a black woman instead of the sort of stereotypical white man with a white beard. And it just really shows that there's nothing inherently male about him. It's just how he's been interpreted. Right. And I know I've been using
exactly.
He,
it's actually,
but, yeah.
It turns out, it's actually really hard to talk about God, right? Because you have to use
exactly.
All our language kind of fails us at some point. But
exactly, yeah.
So let's move on. We're going to shift gears from this a little bit. Okay, so, well, maybe you have something to say there, Gabriel. But let me ask you, these are parables about inclusivity, let's say, right? About the lost being found, about the outsider being brought in, and your interpretations of them were that way. I'm going to ask you a question. Again, there's no right or wrong answer to this. It's just, do you think, and maybe you can think of this in the context of particularly being at high school, being, or just not necessarily school itself, but that's probably where you have most of your interactions for most of the day, right? Do you think life is becoming more inclusive, more accepting, or less so? What's your perspective on that? Maybe Paige, you could just share a little bit about that.
I honestly think, this is a little weird to say, but both.
Okay.
Because I think that, so over time, the spectrum of being inclusive and not being inclusive has just, no side has gotten greater, or the spectrum has just grown. It's just grown.
Yeah.
So people can be, you know, there is such thing as people being more inclusive than people from 30 years ago could even imagine. While, and same thing with being inclusive, I don't know what the opposite word is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so I think I can't really say that in different activities I've been more involved, yeah, or less involved. I think it just depends. And so the spectrum of being involved has just grown,
yeah,
to new limits.
Okay. Eamon, I'm going to put you on the spot. Sorry, buddy. What do you think about that? What's your experience of that whole inclusivity thing? Like, think about your own school situation or neighborhood or whatever. And get the mic really close to your mouth, and so we can.
Well,
personally. I've grown up in like a more inclusive environment. Like, I don't really know many people who are like not inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that would be more rare in like older times.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there has been a movement of inclusivity.
So you see it getting better?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dylan, you sound like you've got a thought on this.
So I don't
Dylan
really...
Dylan said beforehand he didn't really have much to say. He didn't want to share. But you've got great things to say, so I'm glad you're talking.
Thank you. I have not had personal, really, experiences with inclusivity getting more or less in my own life, because I've been around fairly inclusive people my entire life. But statistically, like over time, every sort of societal movement towards one ideal or another will have ups and downs, and mm-hmm. so sometimes it can feel like we're heading backwards in inclusivity and, you know, positivity and all that. But if you look at the general trends over time, people are progressively getting more inclusive, and like some people will use that as sort of an excuse to be like, oh no, it's fine, we don't really need to work because it's naturally getting that way. But really what it means is what we are doing is working to some extent, and so we should keep like working to try to make the world a more inclusive place.
Okay,
anyway,
let's use that then to shift to the final parable, the third parable, and then we'll just spend a few minutes on this, then we'll wrap up. But so that parable was the parable of the mustard seed. Do any of you just want to, I mean, we heard a really, I thought, interesting interpretation of that with YouTube. Any of you guys want to, I think, Michael, you had some thoughts on that to share, right, in terms of why you particularly chose that sort of interpretation?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that grows from nothing. Okay, so like pretty much everything.
The universe? When,
what?
The universe, maybe?
Sure.
Yeah.
The Big Bang or whatever. I think of friendships start from nothing. I think of, just plant growth, like in the actual story, agriculture. But also things that can come out of it. I think you were going to touch on this later. Bad things can spread just as easily. So I think about like lies and rumors and how they snowball.
Mm-hmm.
And so like in school all the time, you hear rumors about things, and most of the time they're fake, but they spread through the school, and the whatever they're about, it always leaves a negative impact. And I just feel like this snowball effect, like it's great when it's a great thing, but when it's not, it's catastrophic.
Yeah, so it can work both ways, in other words, right?
Yeah.
Do you, anybody else on that want to share?
I wanted to touch on that. So I think if you continue working on the sort of mustard seed analogy, if it's a, you know, bad mustard seed, like a, you know, bad rumor that's going around the school or anything, the easiest way to sort of, you know, destroy that bad mustard tree would be to destroy the seed before it gets planted. And I think that sort of makes sense in the other way around. You want to sort of shut down negativity or unhealthy negativity before it spreads. Anyway.
Yeah.
Thought that was interesting.
Eamon's got something here.
I feel like it also could relate to people. Like, we all come from, like, we come from, like, nothing. We start as in a baby, like, we don't really have anything, but as we grow, we change and we get bigger, and good things can come from that, but bad things can also come from that. But it shows how we all start from this tiny, like, these cells. And
Yeah. Well, we're going to wrap up here, okay? So, Hubert, any thoughts about anything that we've touched on? I bet you have.
The young one speaks.
Yeah. As the hip, cool dude, that doesn't even sound right saying that. One thing in particular that was striking in our conversations was how technology has changed the sense of a parable. We started just talking about the idea of being lost is different today than it was even 5 years ago, because someone immediately said, well, just when everybody has a phone of some sort, and so they could just call if they were lost, you know, and so if not, they could borrow a phone. And it kind of really struck me, because I remember once being lost in a department store when I was a child, and there was no phones or anything like that. And so that concept can be different, yet still the idea of being lost, not knowing your way, not knowing who to trust, a sense of hopelessness, that hasn't changed as for us as a species in 2,000 years. But the capacity for folks to have caring and show love and to be helpful, that also hasn't changed, that still exists and can still grow and can still be nurtured. And so I think these stories, be they old or be they new, can still have meaning for us.
Yeah, that's really cool. Then we've got a little slide we can put up here. I mean, a couple of sort of three takeaways perhaps from these parables, that just simple ones, that I think are also relevant to how we've, looking back on this series as a whole, God loves and pursues everyone, no exceptions. I mean, we get this radical leaving the 99 and finding the one sheep, right? I mean, in a way, it doesn't make sense to, I mean, that's risky business to leave the 99, but I think that's what that's showing us is how the way of Jesus, this teacher, this person we're following, and therefore our movement is all about others. It's all about the other rather than ourselves. It's not about, if once it becomes about us, it seems like perhaps we've lost the essence of what Jesus is about. So there's this radical inclusivity, which we probably don't fully comprehend. Next one is, I can't read that actually. We are missed when we are not connected to God. So there's this sense of, you know, like the difference between the coin and the sheep, that when we think about our state as humanity, perhaps rather than just blaming ourselves or blaming others, maybe, and blaming individuals, maybe we need to lean more on God's mercy, more on God's love. And again, I think that leads us back to inclusivity. And then finally, from the parable of the mustard seed, amazing things happen when we take small positive steps. And I think one of the characteristics of the parables, which kind of surprises me really, is how vulnerable the way of Jesus is. Like, there's that mustard seed, it's this very vulnerable tiny thing, and you know, we learned from the or saw in the parable of the sower that not all seeds germinate, not all seeds make it, that there's no inevitability about the kingdom of God. There's no, it's not being forced or coming as some kind of imposed thing. This way of Jesus is very quiet, it's often hidden, it's tender, it's gentle, it can sometimes be blown out, but there's something true and real and life-giving about it. And what I guess I take away from that, and I wonder if we can take away, one of the things we can all take away from these parables is the encouragement never to give up, right? I think we're all working towards justice, we're working towards being better people, we're working towards forgiveness and reconciliation. We want to make the world a better place, and at times it can feel like we're making no progress, or we're going backwards, or situations are despairing and hopeless. I think the parables tell us never give up, because the kingdom of God is always at work. It's this yeast in the lump. It's a tiny mustard seed that can grow into a tree. It's a seed that's scattered that may not always germinate here, but it might germinate over there. So I think if we're feeling at all discouraged or at all despairing, the parables bring us great hope. You know, there's hope beneath the surface, if you like. So anyway, let's give these guys a round of applause. They're doing a great job. You can come sit down now. Thank you.